Greetings, I am Shusada Kona Kumada. Welcome to Satsang. You are beginningless. You are endless. You are divine.
Good evening, everybody out in BBS land. This is Shusada Kona Kumara, and you're joining me tonight for Satsang. Thank you so much for being with us. We're going to go ahead and get started, so please close your eyes, take a nice deep breath, and I will clear the space. Mother, Father, God that I am, through the great Central Sun Hierarchy, through the Office of the Christ, through the Order of Melchizedek, I call upon Archangel Michael to bring the sapphire blue ray. Cut away, cut away, cut away anything in all of our four lower vehicles not emanating directly from our I Am presence. I now call on Archangel Zakiel, Keeper of the Violet Flame. Blaze, blaze, blaze the violet flame through all of our four lower bodies. Transmute, transmute, transmute all the psychic debris Michael has cut free. I now bring forth the invincible ring pass knot and the mirror blue light of invisibility to completely surround each of us. And I call forth a shaft of pure Christ light, one to surround each one of us, and I ask that they be brought to the center of the earth, where I call on Archangel Gabriel to seal them. And I ask that the legions of Michael completely surround each tube of light. And now I ask that our vibrations be raised high above the psychic and astral worlds to the highest realm of illumined truth we each can attain at this time. And now, Mother, Father, God, we place ourselves in service to you and to humanity, and I place myself in service to all of you tonight. We ask that only that which is direct from you be permitted into our perceptions and that all else of the lower mind be kept out. And we ask that only that which is direct from you be permitted through us. And because we have asked this, we consider it so. So be it. Very good. Come on back to me. Well, so Pielian, what are we going to talk about tonight? I'm teasing with her. She's been listening to her archives at work for like 8 hours a day. And she said that I start a lot of programs saying, what are we going to talk about tonight? Because I do. You know, I never know what we're going to talk about, very rarely. Okay, and tonight is no exception. I really don't know what we're going to talk about tonight. And our Charlotte session was the same way. I do want to say that the energies are extremely potent and have been, and I have to be careful. I don't want to scare anybody, but I do want to give my students personally, those of you listening, a heads up that it's coming. Do your best to stay centered. One thing that you have to remember when you're doing dissolution work is that part of what has to happen, because you still live and you're still, you know, having your life here in this reality and all that stuff. Well, part of what happens is the stuff that comes up to be cleared on a collective level, it still has to run through you. So just because you're doing dissolution work doesn't mean it stops happening, right? It still happens. It still runs through you, and you will witness it in your lives. That's where it comes. That's where you're going to see it. So just as a quick, like, just to give you an idea of what I'm talking about, So in the, you know, the last few weeks, I've just had, like, in my personal world, one challenge after another, after another, after another. And they were all, like, really big. They're all big deals, you know, going away so I could get a lot of work done, and 2 days in, having my laptop die on me with everything on it. You know, 130,000 page manuscript sitting there that I don't know if it's recoverable yet. Coming home to another broken desktop now that I still haven't figured out what do I have to do with it. So having no computer whatsoever when the vast majority of everything that I do is on a computer, and having to loan my car out when it was unexpected, and the same exact day having my husband's truck fail inspection and have to go into the garage and being without a vehicle. That was interesting. And it's been like, just like this, one thing after another, after another, after another. And so it's just the energies, and it's all coming up and moving through, and you experience it in your life. So just know that, you know, if you, as you're walking forward, if in a couple weeks or whatever, you start to witness a lot of stuff going a little haywire in your world, like, it's coming. I'm just telling you. I'm just telling you. For some reason, it seems to hit me before it hits my students. So I usually try to give them the duck and cover heads up. Right. Oh, gosh. Okay. So what do we want to talk about? What do we want? If anyone out there wants to call in, this would probably be a great night for it. So I guess BBS does have a thing. You know, I'm not a psychic. I'm not going to read your fortune or do anything like that. But if you have questions for me about deeper spiritual understandings, or, oh, the only problem is I can't hear. I can't hear if someone calls in. You could tell me the question. Okay, so we're good there. So if you want to call in, please feel free to do so. So what do we talk about in session? Any of you have anything that you want to? It's been a few weeks since we were live, and I had them all watch movies while I was gone for our regular sessions. And I'll go ahead and say them here because they're excellent, all three of them. One of them is The Buddha. If you have not watched that movie, it's narrated by Richard Gere. It's just called The Buddha. It is fantastic. You should watch it if you have not already done so. Even if you have, watch it again, because every time you see it, there's stuff going on in that film that literally moves consciousness, and it's really something. So I would highly recommend that film. You also watched Awake, the story of Yogananda. That's an excellent, excellent film. And the other one was Spiritual Warriors. Now that's not something that probably most of you have heard of. It's done by John Roger, who has since transitioned. Thank you. Drew Blank. He ran the Movement for Spiritual Inner Awareness, MSAA.org. Anyway, they put out a film called Spiritual Warriors, and it is fantastic. So I think it's one where you could probably have to go on Amazon or something to order it. But it's an excellent film if you have not seen that come up in your arena. Go ahead, take a look for it and watch it. Okay. Meditation's really good right now. If you can get yourself in that space in your crazy lives. We're coming into that crazy season, aren't we? Just done with Halloween, and now we're into all the other Thanksgiving, and Christmas is coming, and blah. So make time for meditation. It'll be worth it. I'm fussing with my earbuds over here. I took them off, and I can't figure out how to put them back on. I'm looking at it like, it doesn't look right. Okay, Pete's out there laughing, I'm sure. It's like, this woman's crazy. Okay, I'll put one in so if someone calls in, I can hear. Okay, all right. Okay, so tonight in Charlotte, since none of my students here are going to help me. You have something. Oh, do come, Megan. Lovely. And I've been told from Pielian, who's been listening, like I said, 8 hours a day at work, speak very strongly into the microphone so everyone can hear you.
Can you hear me?
Jokey joke. So in our session today, you talked about for us to stop projecting. Like, one of the biggest take-home messages is to stop projecting. And I would love to stop projecting, but I feel as though life revolves around you having expectations of what you need to do in the next hour, or what you need to do 2 days from now, whatever it may be. So to me, it seems like you constantly have to project. You constantly have to create a future. Otherwise, how else would you exist? And exist mean not necessarily, I'm not saying I want to exist, you know, from the personal self. I mean, how could you actually move? Because I can't conceptualize it. So if I'm trying to function from my knowing, from my heart, so that spirit can move through, then how, I can't figure out how you don't project to still be able to function here.
Okay.
Does that make sense?
Yes.
Okay. So the first thing is to don't polarize over the word projection. Okay. Because in essence, you are a projection of the divine. Oh. So that right there kind of kills that whole thing. Because you are. You're a projection of creative energy, you know. So when I say not to function from projection, that means from the level of the story, projection that comes out of the story. Right. So you can be functioning from your heart and working in the world, and there are things that need to get done, and you can put them on your calendar and you can look at it and go, that's due in 2 days. I need to go sit down right now and do that. Well, when all that is moving from the level of heart, you're not the doer in that. There is you, the personal self, is not the doer. It never has been. Anyway, it wants to be the doer, right? And so it creates this reality for itself where it holds itself responsible for all of the everything that happens. And that's not actually what's happening. Spirit, as you, moves through you. As you, moves through you, right? So there's no personal self in that equation, right? Okay, so there's really nothing to think about there. It's not in opposition to each other. Okay. The only time it becomes an issue is now the personal self is running the show and projecting. And the way I was specifically referring to it in session was how many people, you know, your story is the thing that's leading you to project the continuity of the story. So we were talking about, let's say if someone, you had a coffee date with someone and they show up 10 minutes late, what happens is you take your memory of past experiences where people have been late and how things played out in those relationships. And, you know, you broke up and this, that, the other thing. Well, all of that story sits back there. So now when you have, say, a new potential relationship and the person shows up late, you utilize those stories from the past and project out onto them meaning based on those stories that has no place there, right? This person today showing up 10 minutes late has nothing to do with the four other people you were in relationship with who used to show up late on you. But what we do is pull up those memories, make them now, so we're sitting in that experience now that has become our present experience, and now we're projecting out onto this poor person who just walked in and all these things that you don't know to be true. So one of them being, you know, if you show up late, it means you don't care about me. Well, where on earth do you get that idea? Someone doesn't care about you because they're 10 minutes late, right? Well, you know, if they cared about me, they wouldn't be late. Or it means you don't love me, or it means I'm worthless. I'm unlovable. I don't have value. She's not into me. If she was into me, she'd be here on time. Like all of this stuff. That's the projection. I'm saying you all have to really work to spot it when it's going on in your world, and stop it. Call yourself on it. That's the biggest thing. If you could call yourself on it and go, wait a minute, literally have a little inner dialogue that goes, wait a minute, do I know that that's true? Why am I making a judgment right now when I don't know that that's true? How does someone walking in 10 minutes late automatically mean they don't care about me? Where on earth is that real? You know, well, it's real because so-and-so used to always be late, and it ended up they broke up with me. They said they really, you know, they just weren't into me, and it just didn't mean that much. So now the thing is that you've created the story for yourself, and now you're working to continue to perpetuate it, and it's not necessary. And in the act of doing that over and over and over again, you actually just continue to create the story for yourself, and you're the one doing it, you see? And you don't leave any room open for a different outcome. So if someone walks in 10 minutes late and you're already geared up for a fight, what's the outcome going to be? Right? It's going to be opposition. You're ready for it. It's right there. It's already there before they even walk in the door. Well, how on earth do you imagine that there's another outcome that's potential if you're already holding one side of the opposition, you see, versus you being clear and without a story about it. And then the other person comes in and maybe they come in feeling guilty. They're ready for an issue. But instead of them walking into you who already has an issue, they have an issue. So you both have an issue and it ends up being an issue. Now they're going to walk in. Maybe they do feel guilty. And so they're holding one side, but you don't have anything for them. Now you actually have the potential to have it turn into, or not turn into, rather, an issue. Maybe they come in there, I'm so sorry. I'm so, you know, and you're like, that's okay. You're here now. Great to see you. You look great. How have you been? You know, and it's done. But the other way, when you're the one doing the projecting, you've got there's no other way for it to turn out. You know, there's no room there for the universe to do what it would do, which is just to be clear. Yeah. But that's what people do all the time. I mean, you're doing it all the time, constantly projecting out on other people. You know, they did this, so it means that. You know, it just over and over and over again. Oh, he left the toilet seat up again. I swear to God, if I have to tell him one more time to put the toilet seat down, he's just doing it to spite me at this point. It's pure projection. But maybe he is. It could be, but to hold the story doesn't leave any room for anything else, right? I mean, it could be you go to him and you say, I noticed that you left the toilet seat up again. And in that moment, right, maybe he goes, oh my gosh, I am so sorry. I know that really bothers you. I am so sorry. I was so tired when I woke up and I didn't, I'm so sorry, right? Okay, so now he's in an authentic place where he recognizes he did something that he had already said he wouldn't, and he feels remorse for it. Beautiful. Now, if you go in from the place, you left the toilet seat up again, you think he's really going to come at you from his heart? I am so sorry. You know? No, I don't think so. You already came in fighting. You're swinging. What do you think he's going to do? You see? And you could ask him if, in the first scenario, he feels badly. That's the spot that maybe you'll get some truth out of him if you say to him, I just have to ask because it has happened a lot. I mean, do you think you're kind of doing it because you feel spiteful toward me? From a very clear, non-emotional place, you know? And maybe he goes, you know, I never really thought about it. I might be doing it on purpose. Not like, you know, and maybe not. Maybe you say to him, I don't think you're doing it consciously, but I have to wonder, since we've talked about it so much and you still do it, you know, do you think maybe you're angry with me because I'm asking you to put the toilet seat down? And see, now you're open for potential dialogue. Now, it doesn't mean he's capable of going there or not. Depends on the person. But if you come in swinging, already projecting, and you already have your story in place. He doesn't love me. He wants to spite me. He's trying to hurt me. He can't wait to dig at me every chance he gets, you know? Then what do you expect back? You see? So you create it as you're walking into it. And you do it all the time. You do it all the time. You know, it's kind of, and it's when you really start to see it, and you see it in other people in your world and where they do it and stuff, it's, you get to a place where you're like, it's crazy. look at how much strife is caused, how much upset is caused over people just projecting stuff. And no one having a clear picture of what's really going on, you know? If you don't have a clear picture, then just be in that space. I don't know. What's wrong with being in the space of I don't know? Nothing, you know? But every ego out there wants to be in the space of knowing. I want to know. And so if I can't know, I'm going to make it up. Right? Yeah. Oh, here she comes. Here comes Linda.
So what do you do when you know that you're dealing with ego and that they're projecting and projecting and projecting? And even though you stop engaging in that story, yet the projections continue because you know there, and it's very obvious that is ego and that is ego, and bam. And there's nothing you can do about it.
Mm-hmm. You just stop engaging. It's too simple. If all you can do is to be very clear, call them on what they're seeing, you could say, you know what? I'm not arguing that that's what you're seeing, but it's not accurate. This is where I'm coming from. You're seeing that? It's not accurate. I'm telling you where I'm coming from. I'm coming from here. Now, if you choose not to see that for yourself, that is your right. And you can do that. But don't expect me to engage with you from that level, because that is not where I'm functioning from. Period. I mean, and that's all there is to it. Now, so what it comes down to, though, is the person on the other side, it will come down to where they hold you in relationship to them. So if they hold you in a spot of a lot of animosity, of a lot of anger and pain and all of this stuff, they may not be capable of meeting you where you're at. And so you can't expect them to. If they can't, they can't. All you can do is you be clear where you are and give them the opportunity to meet you there. And if they can't, then it's done. There's nothing else to do. That's their choice. If they love you and you have a bond with them, even though there's anger going on and another story running or whatever, but the basis of it is love, and you're very firm with them that way, you know, not from an angry place, not from a cutting place, or I'm trying to, you know, demean you by showing you this, just being very clear, you are not seeing this accurately. This is where I'm coming from, you know, very clear. If they love you, that gives them the only opportunity they've got to actually see that and to honor that in you and believe it. But it's their choice. And you can't control that choice, certainly. But that's all you can do. Not to try to convince them, because you're not there to convince them. All you do is all you can do. This is where I am coming from, right here. Nothing more, nothing less. This is it. And you are not seeing clearly. And if they want to continue arguing about it, there's nothing to argue about. You see, because by engaging with them, it makes their story real, because you're engaging in that story, you see. By you defending yourself to them, you're making the story real for them. And it's not. It's not easy to do, especially when you're dealing with someone that you live with, right? Or someone who's in your life, you know, all the time, that you really have to engage with all the time. It's not easy to do, But you have to. There's nothing else to do. Because if you don't, you just let that story of theirs wrap itself around you. You're making it real for yourself, too. You know? Yeah.
I have a question, because I'm sure some people have to deal with this. But what happens when you try to not engage, when you go through all that, and then you have the person that will follow you wherever you go to try to get away, and they don't leave you alone?
What do you do with the person who doesn't leave you alone? Well, I suppose all you can do really is just turn it back on the person. Right? So if they're following you around and not like, would they follow you down the street? If you like got in your car, they'd follow you in your car too? Or just like in the house? You're like, I'm not going to talk about this. And you walk away and they're following you like that. Is that what you mean?
Mm-hmm. Like you lock yourself in the closet and they're still.
Well, they can't follow you into the locked closet, right?
Talk to you through the closet.
Persistence. Well, there's nothing wrong with being persistent. So in that scenario, you obviously have someone who doesn't feel heard. And of course, and I've told all of you this and our listeners, I'm sure at some point I have. One of the things that the mind struggles with the most is feeling like it hasn't been seen, and heard is the same. So if I'm holding a certain side and I don't feel like you have seen that clearly or you don't get it, a lot of people feel that they are hell-bent to do whatever they have to do to make sure that you understand where they're coming from. The only thing you can do, because you're not going to, if you're in a place of clarity, okay, and this person isn't and is functioning from that kind of offensive space, the only thing that I would say truly, if they're following you around and talking to you through a locked closet door, then I would say probably the only thing you could do would be to open the closet door and say, look, what is it that you feel so desperately that you need to get through to me? Go ahead. Just do it. Tell me when you're done. Right? And give them the opportunity to dialogue to you until they've said everything they need to say. And then, are you done? Yes, I'm done. Okay, very good. I have heard every word you say. Is this accurate? And you can repeat it back to them. So according to you, blah, 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 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, and you get the whole thing. Is that accurate? Yes, that's good. Okay, very good. I heard you. I got it. And now I'm going to go be by myself for a while. And then if they continue and they won't leave you alone, then you have an issue. Now you have a real issue, which is, you know, you're not honoring my space. You're not honoring my desire to be alone at this moment. And if it gets any worse, you know, you will have to take some kind of action. Could end up in a restraining order. Who knows? But the fact is, there's no, you know, you can show that person. If the problem is when the ego is really running, the person loses any sense of their own will, especially if they're in a reactive place. So their own will goes out of the picture completely, and they just can't even access it. So if the program is running from that space, you're going to be hard-pressed to do it. If you can get through to someone who's doing this kind of thing, but they can still be somewhat rational, then you could show them how, you know, so you keep coming at me because you feel that I'm disrespecting you by walking away. Yes. That's not respectful. You should hear what I have to say. Okay, so you get that. But do you understand that by you following me through the house, that's just as disrespectful of me as you think I'm being disrespectful toward you by not listening to what you're saying? Because it is. So if you can get someone who can be just a little bit clear, you can show them that. if it's about disrespect, look at how you're being disrespectful right now, too. We both are. We both are. So what's the answer? How can we both respect each other? You know, go ahead. Come on.
When you were just saying that, I was thinking about how you can, like, how do you draw the line between going tit for tat versus just putting, to put things in perspective for the other person just giving factual information that they need in order for them to see where they're wrong. That's always been my struggle is, okay, am I so engaged that now we're just going back and forth and that person is defending themselves and I'm defending myself, or so it's drawing that line that I struggle with.
Okay, and that's very accurate, I'm sure, for anybody who's done deep work. Because again, what I just said, right? The mind can't stand not being seen clearly. So even when you're holding the space and you are the clear one, it doesn't mean the person on the other side sees you as the clear one. The person on the other side, most likely, if you're clear and they want to engage, oh, they're going to throw all kinds of stuff at you, because what you're reflecting back to them is not feeding their story, right? It's not allowing their story to run. It's not giving them, even from a biochemical place, it's not giving them the endorphin rush that they're used to. It's, you've cut it all off. So a lot of times they'll go into like attack mode. I mean, they might throw all kinds of ugly stuff at you. Oh, you're so self-centered and you think you know everything and you're a narcissist and you're a, you know, just whatever, all kinds of stuff, right? And they do it because they're trying to engage you. And the best thing to do is not to engage. So, you know, you can just say, you know, you can fight all you want. I'm not fighting back because I'm clear. This is what you need to see. And that's all I have to say. I don't have anything else to say. And literally, if they want to, yeah, but you blah, 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 I don't have anything else to say. And you just hold it. And again, when they're up against that, they're either going to, you know, who knows what they're going to do. You may see, they can come at you from a really ugly, ugly place. But it gives them the opportunity as well to stop and actually see themselves. And that, but that's the only way they get the opportunity. They don't get the opportunity if you do go back and forth, if you move into defensive mode where you're having to, where you feel like you have to show them how they're wrong, right? Besides just giving them the facts of what happened and, you know, where they didn't function from a clear place. And you can see it. As soon as you get into the space of having to continue to talk them through it or try to get them to see it, they've already won as far as that battle goes. Because they've got you doing what they want you to do. They want you on the defensive.
So then it stops where you're giving factual information. It's not the going on about, well, you did this before and well, you did that back and forth. I understand that can't be, but so it's really just stating the facts and being done with it. Uh-huh. Okay. And just holding to that.
Yeah. And depending on like where you are, disengaging. And the disengaging is important because remember when you have this dynamic going on, you got the ego over there that it's wanting to battle, right? That's all it really wants to do. So by you completely disengaging, it has nothing. And that's why I say you have to be ready for whatever, because it's crapshoot. You don't know what you're going to get on the other side, because the person on the other side can seriously go into attack mode. I mean, they really can. But it can work in the opposite. And that's been my experience. My experience has been any time that I've had to do that, where I've stood very firm and very strong in that space, and I was like, no, I see clearly. I know my heart. I know where I was coming from. This is it. This is how you perceive it. It's inaccurate, and that's it. And I'm done. And I walked away, or I put my phone away because it was on a text or whatever it was, right? And I didn't go back looking for it. I just was done. Every time in my experience that I've done that, the person has come back from a much more humble place because they were only left with themselves, you know, to stew in their own juices, basically. And in that space, either they're going to be so defiant that they're going to continue to hold that space. Well, and that tells you a ton right there. If they're going to hold that, well, now you know where they function from. They're not capable outside of that. You know, so your expectation of them being capable outside of that needs to drop because they obviously aren't. Or they may start out defiant and angry and all that, but after some time, because you aren't re-engaging, you just cut yourself off. After some time sitting with it, maybe something else comes in and they go, oh, maybe she had a point and let me look at that, you know. And if they're capable of that, that's when they actually will see things about themselves that they couldn't have seen otherwise. And it's only because you held that space that they ever have the chance to be capable of even seeing it. Doesn't mean they will. I mean, you got to remember that, you know, I couldn't, whatever, 95% of the population or whatever is not ready to do this level of work. So there aren't a lot of people who are capable and who, you know, can come back from a clear place. But there are some, certainly, you know. But they'll never have an opportunity until they have someone on the other side who's clear and can stay clear. And, the struggle is to stay clear when you have that on the other side. Because it can come in, you know, you remember that, you know, the ego has within it all of the just the ugliest aspects of personality are in it for everybody. So sometimes it comes out and it just can unleash itself on you and it can be really ugly. I mean, throw in all kinds of names at you and people can get physically violent and just ugly, ugly stuff. Yeah. And all you can do is you just remain centered and clear, even though you're being, having to deal with the onslaught of all that negative energy coming at you. It's not easy. You know, and if it ever happened and you had someone following you around the house, if it got that bad and you literally were going to move into that space where you're going to start fighting back, I mean, literally grab your car keys and just go. Just leave. Grab your kids. Throw them in the car with you. Go. You know. Don't respond back to the text. Don't do anything. Just leave. And let them sit with it. And then later, if they said, why'd you leave? You say, because I'm not doing it. Because people have to see what they're doing. The behaviors out there, you know, they're just ridiculous. When, you know, I mean, if in a rational place, would anybody want to be the person who follows someone around the house after they've asked you multiple times to please leave them alone? You know, do you really want to be that person? I mean, who out there is going to be like, yeah, I want to be that person. Right. But not many people. Or certainly if they could see it in reverse, would you like it if someone followed you around the house? Right. It wouldn't leave you alone, you know. No, I don't think I would. I think just about everybody would agree with that. So, but people can't see it. That's the thing, that there are these aspects of the personality that they can't see, even though they're doing it, right? It's all coming out. You're fighting, you're arguing, it's all out there. But literally, and it sounds crazy, but they can't see it. They're completely unconscious to what's happening. You know, so, yeah, it's not easy, but that's part of your journey too, is to learn to hold that spot. takes a lot of power to do that. That's partially where your meditation is so important too. Remember, every time you're in meditation, you're actually anchoring in more spiritual, what I call spiritual power, right? Energy that's very clear and very refined energy, and you anchor it into your cellular structure, you know, so that when these things come up and you have these big challenges, you have a reserve to call on when you need it. And it doesn't mean you consciously call on it, like, you know, like going into an ATM, I gotta pull out some cash. So it's not that, but it is there for you, and it gives you additional strength to stay centered in the middle of being bombarded with really, really polarized energy. Yeah. And then you learn your limits, you know. So when you get to the place and the person just keeps picking away and wants to just engage you, because for a lot of them, remember, and it's unconscious, but the ego, I mean, it just wants to engage you. If it can just engage you, then that's all I really need. You know, it'll even be willing to lose the battle if I can just engage you. Because why? It's in the engaging that all of that movement chemically in the brain throughout the body, that's when all that happens. So it's going to work to engage you. It's the only thing that's going to make that person feel any better. Mm-hmm. So that's what I mean. Like, they'll be willing to lose the battle, concede the battle. But if they can engage you physically from that place, they'll actually feel better. So when you don't do it, that's what I mean. It really can stir up a lot of stuff. They're looking for the fix, right? Chemically, they're looking for a fix. So for some of them, they're going to get the fix, if it means that they have to bring it out of themselves by lashing out and getting really ugly and nasty and all of that, and projecting onto you all kinds of stuff. You know, it's always kind of, you know, from a very psychological standpoint, you can tell someone who really is functioning from a very unhealthy place when you come into a space where you're trying to show them something, and really from a loving place, where you're clear and just trying to show them that they're doing something or functioning in a certain way that's detrimental to them and detrimental to other people. And when you see the resistance come in and then they lash out, that's just the sign of a very unhealthy person psychologically. You know, it's very unhealthy. The self-esteem is so low that they have to cut others down in order to make themselves feel somewhat okay, you know. So, and not easy to deal with people like that. It's people like that need psychotherapy, you know. They need that level of work. So, yeah. Very good. Anything else?
I have a question. So you were talking about people that have to cut you down and their self-esteem and stuff. So can we talk about, like, high schoolers? Because, like, that's just their life right now. You know, like, and you want to explain that to your kids. Like, this is what you're dealing with. You know, mm-hmm. But I mean, of course, that's just where they're at right now, right? Like, you don't.
Yeah, that's a cop out. That is a total cop out, and in my house would be completely unacceptable.
Well, I'm saying, like, those kids, they don't need. What did you say? Psychotherapy. They don't need that. That's. I mean, we're talking about high school kids.
So, high school kids.
So they need psychotherapy?
They need someone to tell them that the way they're behaving is absolutely unacceptable.
Yes, that's understood. But as far as just how they all behave, period, like, there's just so much drama with these kids. And, like, of course, if I'm dealing with my kids, I tell them, you know, no, that's not acceptable. I don't even allow my kids to joke with each other right now. But just trying to give them advice. And like if they,
well, at their level, if they're in high school, they are capable of understanding you talking to them from this level. So what happens in it, you know, in the high school years, you come into those level teen years, like the full weight of all of the imprinting and everything comes in. Boom. And this is why you see in those teen years the change in personality that happens, right? And it does. It definitely does. So it becomes this acceptable kind of a thing for society that, well, so all teenagers are like this. They're all, you know, they all think they know more than their parents and they all won't listen to anybody and blah, blah, blah. And in this world that we live in, it's become acceptable. It's not, right? But, you know, you watch it happen. We were talking here earlier, right? We were talking about a two-year-old. And we did a whole thing about a two-year-old saying no, 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 and all this stuff, and how to approach a two-year-old from a space where you actually can get them to see what they're doing from their heart, right? And recognize that how they're behaving is not okay. And the thing is, people don't do it when they're two. They sure as heck aren't doing it when the kids, you know, every year it gets a little worse, it gets a little worse, it gets a little worse. And then before they know it, they've got a teenager that they don't even recognize anymore. So rather than making it about a battle, you owe it to your kids, especially someone like you. You have understandings, right? You owe it to your kids to sit them down and explain to them, look, this is what's going on. Is this who you want to be? Is this who you want to be? Now, I mean, and every kid is going to do what they're going to do when they're not with you. Certainly. But my point to my kids would be, I'd rather not have any friends than have your friends. I mean, really, you know, but I was like that in high school. I didn't do any of that crap. That's ridiculous. It's ridiculous. So I didn't hang out with kids like that. Right. And it's, but that training with your kids starts younger, you know, in elementary school, at least with my daughters, that's where I saw it. Comments that start coming up about the clothes you wear or who's popular. And I'm like, you're in fifth grade. What do you mean who's popular? Like, that's ridiculous. But what they had for me at home was this constant voice saying, they're not your friend. That's not a friend. You think she's your friend? She's not your friend. Would you do that to her? I wouldn't do that to her. Well, then there you go. So what do you care? Why do you feel like you need to hang on to her? Why do you feel like you need to do something to garner her approval? She's not your friend. She doesn't care about you. She's made it very obvious, right? And that's hard for kids, but better that they hear the truth, you know, and feel kind of alone in that aspect of their life at school. Better that than going through it and functioning from a distorted, ugly place and then going into their adult years really not having a clue how to function in the world, you know. I mean, I can only speak for myself, but with my kids, I'm extremely firm with them when it comes to how they treat people and how they allow themselves to be treated by others.
Well, can I ask, like, you know, sometimes you know the other kid that mm-hmm. is saying whatever it is that they're saying, and you know yeah. that they're in a place where they're hurting.
Yep.
And it's really just a kick the dog syndrome type deal. You know, do you say to your kid, like, I mean, sometimes you say, is that really a friend? Whatever. But there's also the times where you say, they're in a really tough spot right now where they're mm-hmm. hurting. And, you know, like, maybe you should have a little bit more compassion or understanding. Sure. Or, okay.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. There's nothing wrong with that. Because, of course, the ego for your own child, you know, it's, you got to play both sides. You can't be the parent who doesn't see the negative aspects of your children. Heavens no. So yeah, you absolutely. I've had a lot of talks like that with my kids where other kids are mean to them or whatever. And then you say you have to explain to them he's only a bully because he's hurting. You don't know what's happening to that boy at home. And that's why he feels God only knows what could be happening to him at home. And so he comes to school and he feels like he has to, he picks on other kids and it makes him feel a little bit better, you know, so have compassion for him. It doesn't mean you allow it to happen, but don't be angry with him for it because he doesn't know how to deal with it. Yeah. It's a combination of all of it, you know. The whole point, though, is with your kids and when they're growing up, I mean, you're responsible for their morality as a parent. You're responsible for all of it, right? For who they're going to be. You have a responsibility to them. So use your wisdom, and you in particular, you know, are graced by having more wisdom than most because of what you've chosen to do in your spiritual work, and they can benefit from that. Now, you aren't responsible for the choices they make going forward, but you'd be negligent in the sense that if you carry all of this understanding on your own and you aren't doing anything to get that into their skulls, right? There's a level of negligence there. You know, and sometimes, I mean, I came up against this last year with my teenager, where part of me wanted to just literally say, you know what, just do whatever you're going to do. And maybe you just have to fail. Maybe you just have to have that experience. But even though from a personal place, that's what I wanted to do, because the fighting was, you know, the constant having to be so firm and, you know, being that kind of drill sergeant for my son was really wearing on me. But I couldn't in good conscience, even though I wanted to just back off completely and let him make his own choices and tank, I couldn't in good conscience do it. And he hated that. He wanted me to just drop it and let him make his own choices. Why couldn't you do that? And I'm like, because it wouldn't have been right. It wouldn't have been right. How am I serving you as your mother when I have wisdom, you know? And it's my job to do the best that I can do, you know, to do the best that I can do to get that through to you so that you can function better in your world. And if I have to bully you into doing it, I'm going to have to bully you into doing it. We're talking about my extremely obstinate son. So... yeah, so it's good that you asked that question. It's, you know, I guess tonight's topic has really been kind of how you, where you hold yourself in the world. And it is true, the more understandings you have to live from them. And, you know, all of your, everything that's going on, if you're really paying attention, it's all about interpersonal relationship. That's where you see everything come up. Why? Well, because the one on the other side of you, remember, is going to be represent an unconscious aspect of you. So everything here is about interpersonal relationship, because it's in the relationship that you have the opportunity for your growth, right? In all of it. So when you've got the person following you around the house, you can be very firm and you can be clear and you can do what you can do, but you can also look at that piece. Why is it that even after I've been clear, even after I've done whatever I've done, he still continues to follow me around the house? And look at it not as him, but an aspect of me. What is it there? What's that? You see, because there can be something to be seen in that. Look at the other person as you. You know, where are you in like that in the world? And you don't think of it as a bad thing. But when someone else does it to you, it's a terrible thing. Right? You know, worth looking at. All of that stuff. Take every opportunity you can find. Yeah. How are we doing time-wise? We're good? Okay, so we're going to go into our meditation for tonight. And we will be back with you next Thursday for Satsang. Thank you so much for joining us. Our love to you. Good night.
Why be afraid if I'm not alone? Life is never easy rest is unknown. And up to now, for me, it's been.
You are beginningless. You are divine.